Angel Colon. This is Angel is with us this morning. Okay. Angel also just underwent additional medical treatment, so we so appreciate that you're here, Angel, and we understand if at any point you need to leave, we will make that happen. So just let us know. We have a number of people that we're going to hear from today. Before we begin anything, I know that everyone wants to know some statistics on patients and patient conditions. So I'm going to bring up Dr. Mike Cheatham, who can provide that information.
And we're watching doctors take their place at the table to give us this update from the Orlando Regional Medical Center.
We've been looking at the patients that are still in the hospital. It's a very fluid situation, as I think you can understand. So this is this update, literally as of moments ago. Of the original 44 patients that were brought to Orlando Regional Medical Center, the Level 1 Trauma Center here in Central Florida, we still have 27 patients that are admitted in the hospital. Of these, 6 patients are in the intensive care unit, and 21 patients are on the floor. Of these patients, we have 6 patients remaining in the hospital that are critically ill. We have 5 that are in guarded condition, and we have 16 patients that we would consider to be stable. No patients have succumbed to their injuries since the initial 9 patients who came to us at the time of the shooting. All of the patients since arrival to the hospital are still with us. They are steadily improving. There were a number of victims that left the scene of the nightclub. They were trying to get away from the shooting. Several of those patients have subsequently presented to our hospitals. Yesterday, we saw 2 patients that presented to one of our sister hospitals, Doctor's Hospital, and there was another patient that presented, I understand, this morning to another of our sister hospitals, Health Central Hospital. We anticipate that we may see other victims come into the hospitals over the next few days as they identify injuries that they may have sustained. Patients continue to go to the operating room for their injuries. In addition to the 28 cases that we did the initial day of the response, yesterday we completed 8 further operations, and we have another 8 operations that are scheduled for today on the victims of this event. Cam?
So over the last couple of days, you may have seen or you may have spoken to a number of our surgeons about their experiences that early morning. And if you haven't heard them say it, they all want you to know that they do not work in isolation, that it takes a team. So before I introduce them, I want to recognize some other very important members of the team. We have, and I know it's tight, so raise your hands as I call your name. We have several emergency and trauma nurses with us today. Stephanie Brown. I mean, Stephanie Urban. I'm sorry. Okay. Let's see. Jessica Friel. Jim Zolnowski.
As we listen to the introduction of staff of the hospital, different people who have been working with patients there, the headline so far is at Orlando Regional Medical Center, a level 1
Julie
trauma
Warren.
Center. They still have 27 patients
Dominique
admitted in the
Cannon.
Hospital, 6 in intensive care, 21
Michelle
patients,
Fackler.
They said, are on the floor, 6 critically ill, 5 in what they're calling
Megan,
guarded condition, and
Mobley?
16 stable.
Okay,
they also said
sorry
that no patients
that.
Have succumbed to their injuries since they
Alicia
came to this
Bechtel,
hospital. However, a number of operations are scheduled today. 8 today, they said.
Okay.
8 operations yesterday. So that tells you that the work the doctors and surgeons continue to do at Orlando Regional is very serious
Sandy
and ongoing.
Okay. Sandy is the anesthesiologist who was
again,
on
they're running through a list of people who have treated patients. We anticipate to hear more doctors and more surgeons speak very soon. And we also see at this table in the front of the room where the hospital's holding this news conference, Angel Colon, who they said just underwent additional medical treatment. We don't have a lot of information about him yet, but he's very obviously a patient. He's wearing a yellow tag around his wrist, sitting in a wheelchair. It looks like relatives are with him. A woman has her hand on his shoulder right now, comforting him as he looks down very solemnly, waiting for his opportunity to speak at this news conference. And certainly everyone who's listening to what's happening at the hospital looks forward to hearing from James Mr. Colon as well, as he shares his horrific memories from James Potts, that Dr. night. Thomas Someone's whispering Hill. In his ear right now. A little smile from him. Dr. That's encouraging to see.
So Angel?
Actually, this is Angel Colon, a survivor.
Out today. I really appreciate it. I want to thank you guys for coming out today. I really appreciate all the love I've gotten in these past 3 days that I've been here. At first, I was a bit hesitant, you know, to come up here because it's still fresh to me, all this that has happened. But I would love to give my story out so everyone can know what is going on now in this community, and how some people are just so heartless, and how we're treated. But on Sunday morning, early morning, we were just having a great time. We're all there, you know, having a drink. It was shortly after 2. We're saying our goodbyes. I'm hugging everyone. It was a great night. No drama, just smiles, just laughter. And I was talking to the last girl I was talking to, and out of nowhere, we just hear a big shotgun. We stop what we're doing, and then it just keeps going. That happened, and we just grabbed each other. We started running, and unfortunately, I was shot about 3 times in my leg, so I had fallen down. I tried to get back up, but everyone started running everywhere. I got trampled over, and I shattered and broke my bones on my left leg. So by this time, I couldn't walk at all. All I could do was just lay down there while everyone was just running on top of me, trying to get to where they had to be. And all I could hear was the shotgun, one after another, and people screaming, people yelling for help. By this time, this man, he goes into the other room, and I can just hear more shotguns going on. I thought I was a little safe at this time because, you know, it's giving everyone time to tackle him down or get him down. But unfortunately, I hear him come back, and he's shooting everyone that's already dead on the floor, making sure they're dead. I was able to peek over, and I can just see him shooting at everyone. And I can hear the shotguns closer, and I look over, and he shoots the girl next to me. And I'm just there laying down. I'm thinking, I'm next. I'm dead. So I don't know how, but by the glory of God, he shoots towards my head, but it hits my hand. And then he shoots me again, and it hits the side of my hip. I had no reaction. I was just prepared to just stay there, laying down, so he won't know that I'm alive. And he's just doing this for another 5-10 minutes. He's just shooting all over the place. By this time, he goes up to the front, and I think that's when he's battling against the cops. I just hear shotguns going all over the place. And I'm looking up, and some cops, which I wish I can remember his face or his name, because to this day, I'm grateful for him. He looks at me, he makes sure that I'm alive, and he grabs my hand, and he's like, this is the only way that I can take you out. I'm like, please carry me, because I'm in pain right now. Couldn't walk or anything. So he starts to drag me out across the street to the Wendy's, and I'm grateful for him, but the floor is just covered in glass. So he's dragging me out while I'm just getting cut. My behind, my back, my legs. And I don't feel pain, but I just feel all this blood on me from myself, from my other people. And he just drops me off across the street, and I look over and there's just bodies everywhere. We're all in pain. And we were able to get to the ambulance. They brought us over here, and the way that you guys have taken care of us in this hospital is amazing.
Yep.
If it wasn't for you guys, I definitely would not be here. Every morning, in the middle of the night, the afternoon, you guys are always there, and I really appreciate that. And I would love you guys forever for doing that for me.
Very emotional words from Angel Colon, a survivor of the Pulse nightclub shooting. He's now giving his remarks in Spanish. Let's go back now to the Orlando Regional Medical Center, where doctors are describing their work after the shooting.
Gary Parrish. And again, I am the medical director of the emergency department here at ORMC. If you don't know, our emergency department here is a very busy, active, 75-bed academic center where we train emergency medicine residents as we train trauma and other residents. I did happen to be working clinically in the emergency department Saturday night, overnight, Sunday morning. I was scheduled actually to leave at 3 o'clock in the morning. Around 2 o'clock or so, we got word that there were some shootings. Now, we have a very busy trauma service, so getting shootings is not anything terribly unusual, but we didn't know quite what was about to hit us. So about 2 o'clock or so, we got notice of the patients coming in and brought those in. We work in teams in the emergency department. Dr. Bondani was the other attending physician who was working with me in the emergency department that night, who was actually stationed in the trauma bay. Of course, due to the extent of the injuries here, we all took care of these patients. But I want Dr. Bondani to describe a little bit, because she was there actually before I got there initially.
Catherine Bondani, K-A-T-H-R-Y-N. B-O-N-D-A-N-I. So, like Gary said, we got essentially a call saying that we had some gunshot wounds coming in. We didn't know exactly how many we were going to get. Dr. Stone and I, the senior resident, went to the trauma bay to get ready for the patients to start coming in. And our first patient was relatively stable, awake and talking to us, and we thought maybe they're all going to be like this and that would be great. And then we quickly got two or three more that were very critical in nature. Several of our other senior residents came into the trauma bay, as well as Dr. Parrish, to start helping us triage the patients. The trauma team, Dr. Smith and his awesome residents, came in and started helping us kind of figure out who was sick, who was the sickest, and what we needed to do. We quickly got about 5 patients, and that was a lot for us, and we thought maybe that was going to be it. And then they started lining up in the hallway. They weren't being brought in by ambulances. There was no paramedics coming in and giving us support and dropping them off. They were being dropped off in truckloads and in ambulance loads, where our amazing nurses and techs were putting them on stretchers and rolling them into us and telling us that another patient's here, another patient's here, another patient's here. And quickly our trauma bay became full to capacity and we had to move people out. So Dr. Smith and Dr. Parrish and I started using the residents and quickly figuring out who was the sickest and who could move out of the trauma bay to make room for somebody else so that we could triage and treat everybody. And in a matter of 30 minutes, I think we had multiple surgeons coming in the door to help us out. I saw dozens of nurses who I knew were not on that night who showed up. I saw techs coming from everywhere. We had x-ray in there. We had blood in there. We had everybody in there trying to figure out who was sick and who wasn't. And we just started one by one moving through and trying to figure out who needed to go where and just going one by one and figuring them out. And I think that Dr. Smith was really the kind of team leader who helped us kind of triage and move from patient to patient.
Let me just make a couple of comments. We in our area, as in many metropolitan areas, have a very advanced EMS system. And fortunately, they give us advanced notice for patients that are coming in. So that helps greatly in preparing our personnel and our resources. The difficulty in this case was that there was really no advanced notice at all because of the proximity. Now, that was great for the patients, them being close, but it made it very difficult for the medical staff and the nursing staff to take care of these patients because they essentially were showing up without any notification at all, and we really didn't know what their injuries were until they were brought into the trauma bay. We have a fantastic trauma service. We have a very collaborative and wonderful relationship with our trauma surgeons. The trauma surgeons that were here called in backup quickly, and they arrived unbelievably fast. So that was really fantastic as the emergency physician.
Dr. Smith, you want to talk about the trauma team?
Sure. So, and you're listening to doctors at the Orlando Regional Medical Center describe the night of the shooting, early Sunday morning, actually, how overwhelmed they were in the trauma centers. The medical director said we didn't know quite what was about to hit us. And the doctors continue speaking at Orlando Regional Medical Center.
On call that night. I got a call from the emergency department resident. She called me on my cell phone, and that's kind of unusual, and said that there's multiple gunshot wounds coming, and I went down to the trauma bay, and just as Kate said, the patients just started coming. One came, then another came, then another came, and the first patient, as she said, was shot. I needed to go to the operating room, but had stable vital signs. The next patient was not as lucky, and I quickly realized that I needed to call backup. I called Dr. Ibrahim, was the backup trauma surgeon that night. I called him, and then more patients continued to come. I called Dr. Cheatham, and then once they got there, the flow did not stop, and so I began to call my other partners, Dr. Haverin. Dr. Levy actually called me, and he was on call for pediatric surgery at Arnold Palmer Hospital, and offered to help. I said, please come, we need your help. I then got a hold of Dr. Luby, and then started calling the residents. You know, you can imagine calling someone at 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning when you get a phone call from work. You know, some people don't have their phones on, some people have them, you know, in the kitchen. But I think almost every person that I called answered the phone. I said, this is not a drill. This is not a joke. We have 20 to plus gunshot wounds coming in. I need you here as fast as I can. And every time the answer that I got was, I'll be right there. After that, after making those phone calls, again, quickly they arrived to the emergency department, and I was on the phone with the operating room. Dr. Mukherjee quickly flexed up. We usually run about two ORs at night, if we, but we got in personnel, nurses, CRNAs, staff from all over the organization quickly to get these patients in the operating room. I want to say that looking out here today, as crowded as this is about the level of crowdedness that it felt in the emergency department that night. Add in people in pain, people worrying about their loved ones, people not knowing where their loved ones are, and we're trying to help them all. Quickly, we got a couple patients up to the operating room. Again, our first patient, he needed to go to the operating room, but he was stable. There were quickly thereafter probably four to five patients that came in that we were unable to save. And then there were several that came in and that needed operation almost immediately, and they got taken up. I believe Dr. Luby stayed up in the operating room. Dr. Havern was up in the operating room, and they would just operate. And as soon as their room was done, they would move the patient to the intensive care unit and send me another one. And I would walk around the emergency department and try to determine, just by looking at their vital signs, their wound pattern, and how awake they were, where they needed to go. And I tried to keep everybody that needed to go to the operating room in the trauma bay. If someone was brought in from the emergency, from the street into the trauma bay, they were quickly assessed. If they did not have immediate life-threatening injuries, they were moved elsewhere in the emergency department and cared for by our colleagues in critical care medicine. We had EMTs that would drop a patient off that would start putting in lines in other patients. We had environmental services would have the bay where patients would go clean in about 30 to 45 seconds with sharp objects, with bloody towels, with all kinds of stuff done. Everybody was done it safely. I just cannot say enough about how much we increased our resources to the level of need, within a very short period of time. After we got that initial wave, about probably 20 to 22 patients stabilized or sent to the operating room, we had kind of, if you would call it, a lull while the shooter was barricaded inside. At this point, we had used basically everything in the emergency department, and our suppliers got stuff from Central Supply, brought stuff over from Arnold Palmer Hospital, from Winnie Palmer Hospital, such that we didn't need for anything. We had used it all, but we had it replaced basically immediately. Then we got word from OPD that there would be another 20 to 25 patients continuing to come. And that's when the second wave started to come, and it was basically a repeat of the first. We had gotten some of those patients out of the operating room to the intensive care unit, and we just kind of started doing it all over again, putting the patients that needed to go to the operating room in the trauma bay, or moving people that did not out to the other parts of the emergency department. And I just can't thank my partners, my colleagues in nursing, respiratory therapy, environmental services, the support staff, did a great job. I think it is very fortunate that this happened two blocks away, and it's very fortunate that we have the team to pull together like we do.
Do you want to talk about what kind of...
Doctors at the Orlando Regional Medical Center talking about what they witnessed the night of the Pulse nightclub shooting in Orlando and answering questions as well.
Medical director here at Orlando Health. So upon entering the trauma bay, as Dr. Smith described, it was somewhat of a what you would think of a war scene. The trauma bay was very full. We had patients in every corner. We saw the full gamut of wounds, from wounds to the extremities, wounds to the chest, wounds to the abdomen and pelvis area, as if they were shot from below, which is what has been described to me by some of the EMS people. It varied in the size of the wounds, from small caliber wounds to a very large caliber wound, which the larger ones left a significant amount of tissue destruction, which is something that we're not as used to seeing, something more from like a rifle or something you would expect with that. And as you would expect with the large soft tissue wounds, you also had large wounds inside cavities, whether it be the chest or the abdomen. So we had, again, the full gamut. But again, we had the full team come together. We had all kinds of nursing, respiratory therapists, everybody come together. The orthopedic surgery team was even very, very helpful, even in the emergency department. I had orthopedic residents come with me to help triage patients, removing tourniquets, things like that. So again, we mentioned ED, this general surgery, but the ortho team was also instrumental in that as well. Then they would take the patients that were maybe not as emergent after we had taken care of the critical ones and take care of the orthopedic injuries, as you heard Mr. Colon talk about with his. So again, the full gamut of injuries.
Dr. Mukherjee, you want to talk about the OR? Because the ORs, they're special places, as you can imagine.
Doctors at the Orlando Regional Medical Center continue to describe a pretty overwhelming scene. Patients being dropped off by the truckload, by the ambulance load. They're describing a trauma bay that was quickly at capacity. A hospital that seemed like it was in a war zone, as they describe what they had to do that night.
My colleague, Dr. Mark Nakajima, anesthesiologist that was on call with me that morning, I'd like to thank all the nurse anesthetists, all the operating room staff, the nurses and the techs. As was described earlier, the situation rapidly escalated from the first victim that came up. I'd like to personally thank the calm, heroic demeanor and the professionalism that was exhibited by everyone that morning. I appreciated my surgical colleagues. We rapidly opened up the operating rooms in the face of potentially life-threatening, horrific injuries. I appreciate the calm demeanor and how things were handled and how it was triaged. We literally went from operating room to operating room, so much so we're, I believe we're on our 13th procedure approximately at 6 in the morning. I just want to just express my thanks and gratitude for what was exhibited in the operating room from every member that was there that morning. The cases continued throughout the whole day. There was never any downtime. We rapidly opened up as many operating rooms as was needed. I appreciated all the responders, from the nurses, from our nurse anesthetists that came in that morning. There wasn't a question of coming. They came as soon as they could. They were notified, and I thank them for that.
Thank you. Dr. Havering, you told a compelling story the other day about your experience going from one OR to the next OR. Can you explain that today?
I'm William Havron. I'm the General Surgery Program Director here and one of the trauma surgeons. As Dr. Smith alluded to, I got a phone call and immediately came into the hospital and was asked to proceed directly to the operating room. And, as everybody said here, with a busy level one trauma center, we're used to seeing gunshot wounds. We're used to seeing a multitude of injuries each and every night, but this was somewhat of a surreal experience. We were just given patient after patient after patient. The OR would fill with a patient. We would proceed with operative intervention, whatever was needed, and then would literally walk from that operating room to another operating room and do it again and again. As everybody's already spoken, I can't say enough about how great this institution was. The resources, everything that was needed was immediately available. Everybody flexed up and made sure that operating rooms were available, ICU beds were available, step-down beds were available, nurses were here, techs were here. Every service worked together, and that is the most instrumental thing in taking care of patients in this situation. Second, I would say I'd not be more proud of this team, especially our surgical residents. They work very hard as it is, lots of demands put upon them. To answer the call at 3:30 in the morning, some of which were on vacation, some of which were, tired and had already been working all week, to come in on a moment's notice to help take care of folks in need, I think speaks volumes of them, and I couldn't be prouder.
Dr. Cheatham, do you have any final words before we open it up for Q&A?
Yeah, I disasters are something that we plan for. All trauma centers around the world do this. You can never prepare adequately for an event such as this. But we have spent quite a bit of time over the years working with all of our colleagues in all of the departments to have a plan of how we would address this, and we have a tiered approach based on the number of victims that we anticipate. This was the largest disaster that we probably could have imagined. We went ahead and we implemented the plan that we have designed over the years and perfected through practice. And I think it worked. I think that the fact, as Gary Parrish already alluded to, that the victims were literally three or four blocks away made a tremendous difference in their outcome. We know that getting to a trauma center improves lives, improves survival. And they were able to get here, many of them within minutes. The second wave of victims was obviously delayed because it was an active shooter situation and the police were trying to get the victims out of the building. But as soon as they could rescue them, again, they were immediately brought to us by whatever transportation was available. The reason that we were never at want for anything is because of the support from our entire team. You know, you can think about the medical side of things. You think about doctors and nurses and respiratory therapists saving lives. But there are so many other parts of the team that are also there to save those patients' lives. And so while we as the surgeons were in the operating room with our anesthesia colleagues or working with our emergency medicine colleagues, the nursing staff, the respiratory therapy staff, et cetera, in the emergency department or operating room, there was a much larger team of administrators, of our support personnel that were behind the scenes, constantly communicating with us to know what we needed. So as Dr. Smith mentioned, when we had literally exhausted the supplies that were in the emergency room, I was literally able to get that information from him, turn to our colleagues in logistics, and literally within minutes, more supplies were being brought to the scene. So there was never a time that we were without anything that we needed. When I went to Dr. Mukherjee early in the course of this, as we were beginning to recognize the magnitude of it, we spoke in the operating room, and you know, my hat is off to Sandy and his team. They rapidly escalated from two operating rooms to six operating rooms, literally within about 30 to 60 minutes. I doubt that anybody could have done it faster, and I really we need to commend them for that. The entire team worked together, I think that is why we've had the outcomes that we have with these victims. We're pleased that we've not had anybody succumb to their injuries as yet. I have to caution everyone that there are six people in the hospital right now from this event that remain critically ill. And as I said the first day, I would be surprised if we do not see the death toll rise from this. We're doing everything that we possibly can to pull them through this, but they are critically ill as a result of their injuries. I know that those patients and their families would covet your prayers and your thoughts for their rapid recovery.
That's Dr. Michael Cheatham, a trauma surgeon at the Orlando Regional Medical Center, talking about early Sunday morning when the trauma center was overwhelmed with patients coming in from the Pulse nightclub shooting. Six still are critically ill, but as of now, after 44 patients originally came to that hospital, they said none have succumbed to their injuries. I'm Scott Goldberg. You're listening to live coverage from ABC News. And now let's go back to Orlando Regional Medical Center, where one of the survivors, Angel Colon, is answering questions.
I still can't walk, but as long as I have a smile on my face and I have that love that I feel, I'm okay.
Can you tell us who you're with?
I'm here, Hebron, Dr. Jennifer Ashton, ABC. Congratulations to your whole medical center staff. Phenomenal care. You mentioned the surgical residents. Could you tell me a little bit in general how many residents accompanied and operated each attending and were cardiothoracic surgery call room for the chest wound?
We have five categorical residents a year, so that's five people who are here with us for 5 years, plus a additional six interns who are here for 1 year. Numerous residents were called in. I can't tell you. I know that I had one resident with me through every one of my six cases, and that resident alternated. I mean, I went from chief residence to fourth year residents and a third year resident in one case, and in addition, one of our critical care fellows. As far as cardiothoracics, you know, specialists were called in when the need was there, and I think that depended on the variability of what cases were involved. We had vascular involved. I don't believe that any cardiothoracic services were required.
Congratulations to all the nurses who participated. Dr. Cheatham, could you talk a little bit about the expertise of the trauma nurses, the surgeon nurses, and the emergency room nurses in this case?
So I will tell you, we have the best nurses in the world. There is no question in my mind. You know, if you think that doctors are important, keep in mind that, and for those of you that have been patients, you know this, doctors come by for perhaps 15, 20 minutes a day. You have a nurse for 24 hours. So the nurses are the true caregivers. They are the ones that are carrying out the physician's orders. The nurses did a phenomenal job. We had nurses coming to us from our we have a pediatric hospital and a women's hospital on our campus. So the nurses from those two hospitals were coming over to help. We had nurses from our ICU that came down to the trauma bay again to help. We were never without the need for manpower, and the nurses did a phenomenal job. Our respiratory therapists did a phenomenal job. We have pharmacists that are in our trauma bay with us. Everyone came together and met the patient's need.
You're listening to doctors at the Orlando Regional Medical Center take questions from reporters in the crowd as they continue describing the events of early Sunday morning when they were overwhelmed with patients after the Pulse nightclub shooting. I'm Scott Goldberg. This is live coverage from ABC News. And again, there are there's some shuffling in the room, a very crowded room at Orlando Regional Medical Center. A nurse is stepping up to the microphone to answer questions from reporters.
Noble. N-O-B-L-E-T. I think, Angel, I think you were my second patient because I got the call at like 3 a.m. and I came right in. And he was very brave. And I just remember his name was Angel, and we have a medic who also his name is Angel. So, and he was also helping out with you. I don't know if you remember him, and also Vicky. So, it was a very chaotic night, but all of us as a team worked together, and we were really able to do a very good job. So,
Megan, how is it feel seeing
over here, Channel 7?
Do you have anything
Angel?
To say to her?
Okay.
Angel, I love you guys.
Go ahead,
Angel. Dan Housley, 70s Boston. Obviously, a lot of your family got there for you, but there's so many more back home who are thinking of you and they told you them your story. Is there anything you'd like to say about people who are thinking about you?
They have been. I've been getting calls and messages all day, every day. They're very concerned about me, but I've let them know that this hospital, you guys have all been taking care of me very well. And
have you been hearing it from folks back home? How much are thinking?
Yes, a lot.
Can any of your family members say?
I'd like to ask Dr. Parrish a question. Dr. Parrish, if you could, sir, I know that you have to have mass casualty drills. How does that differ from reality when you have pickup trucks loads of patients coming in with the frequency they were coming in? So how did your mass casualty drill equate to reality?
It's as Dr. Cheatham said, it is something that we practice frequently. We do this a lot. And when we plan for and hope not to get, but do spend a lot of time planning for the infrastructure, what we have to do if we have these patients. But it is different. It's a lot different. When you have folks that are acting like they're ill or have moulages on, is a lot different than the real patient coming through the door with large injuries.
In a white top back here.
You still have a great need for blood. I mean, because people are still lining up to donate.
I'm sure there is a need for blood.
Angel, Katrina Perry from RTÉ in Ireland. I'm just wondering if you've had the chance yet to process actually what happened, or if you can comprehend how someone could do something like this.
This person has to be heartless. Heartless, ruthless. I don't know how you could do something like this. Just seeing all these bodies everywhere, and this person is just enjoying doing this. There's no way. I don't know how.
How do you know he was enjoying it?
I've heard from others that he was laughing in other rooms. I heard that he was calm, just doing his thing.
This is Angel Colon speaking. He's a survivor of the Pulse nightclub shooting in Orlando at this news conference. You're hearing what sounds like chaos as reporters in the room ask questions, not just of Angel Colon, a survivor, but this team of doctors, of surgeons who have come to talk about the night. They were just overwhelmed, and patients were getting dropped off by the truckload in the ambulance room, ambulance load, quickly filling the trauma center at Orlando Regional. And it's been quite a story. Once again, here is Dr. Joseph Ibrahim answering questions from the reporters.
There was a variety of things. You could tell we had both small caliber and large caliber, and you could tell proximity based on the amount of injury. We had some that had massive soft tissue loss that we assume, after talking with the detectives, they were more in close proximity, as opposed to some that were running away that maybe the bullet had less tissue. We did see through and through injuries that we had to make it somewhat difficult. You have to determine the course. The small caliber ones can kind of bounce around inside cavities and cause multiple injuries, which we've seen that as well.
So when you say small caliber, large caliber, that means he was using both the rifle and the handgun, you believe?
It would seem so, yes, sir.
First of all, congratulations to all of you. Manita Rosa with America TV in Miami. Dr. Smith, I guess. The fact that you have 44 patients that are alive today, and with caution, as the doctor said, on a personal note, how does that make you feel? Y Ángel, unas palabritas en español referente a por qué decidiste.
He listened to a reporter ask questions in English and Spanish of the doctors, the trauma surgeons at Orlando Regional Medical Center. How did it feel to know that all the patients who came in there, at least as of now, have survived their wounds?
And I said this yesterday, you know, with all of the stuff that the victims, the families, the loved ones have been through, and all of that our team members have been through, I can say that I am extremely proud of EMS, nursing, respiratory therapists, the doctors, all of the support staff, and our entire community. It was singularly the worst day of my career and the best day of my career. And I would think that this is probably the same for every person you see standing up here.
And now the microphone once again back in front of Angel Colon, a survivor. He's answering a question in Spanish, obviously bilingual, but you heard before that a doctor describe what he saw at Orlando Regional Medical Center in the aftermath of the Pulse shooting as singularly the worst day of my career and the best day of my career. They said that 44 patients came to that hospital, a level one trauma center, in the hours after the Pulse nightclub shooting. The fact that it is just a couple of blocks away from the nightclub, they say, made a very important difference. It helped them do their jobs because they were able to treat these very serious wounds so quickly. Still, 27 patients are at that hospital, 6, they said, in intensive care. And though no patients had succumbed to their injuries since they came to the hospital, the doctors said it is still possible the death toll could go up because of those patients who are in critical condition. And still, Angel Colon is answering a question in Spanish. And we hear reporters in the room continuing to ask questions of the doctors assembled there. A big group of doctors in a very crowded room taking questions at Orlando Regional Medical Center.
Team member grief counseling, I believe every 2 hours. I went to it last night and heard a lot of stories from some of the team members that were there that night, some of the team members that came in that later, you know, to kind of take over Sunday afternoon. I shared with them how I was feeling. I was on call again last night, and I was walking out of the hospital, and walking out, I saw team members walking into work crying, and I just couldn't express how, it's hard to describe how you feel, but I know how they feel, they know how we feel, and you know, when the task comes to hand, you just do what needs to be done.
Wait, Kina, can I say something real quick first on that too? On to your note about debriefing and things, we've also been in contact with programs in Boston who've been through similar situations. They actually reached out to us. The world response to this has been amazing. People from Oklahoma who had gone through the Oklahoma City bombings have reached out saying what they went through, what they felt was advantageous to team members who needed some sort of debriefing, counseling, and some of the things that helped them, and we thank them for that. So that those are some of the things we've implemented as well.
Angel, the world's watching. What do you want the world to know about Orlando's...
The question again going to Angel Cologne, who survived the Pulse nightclub shooting in Orlando.
I want the world to know that our community is, we are together. We are helping each other. We're getting through this together. I've seen so much love from everyone, not to only me, but to the other victims, to the families, and we really have each other's backs in these situations that happen.
How are you doing? Wesh, local. It is concerning to hear you say you wouldn't be surprised if the death toll rises. Of the six who are still critical in ICU, can you give a sense of how severe these injuries are? Are you concerned there may be one or more people who won't walk out of here if they do get better?
This is Dr. Michael Cheatham, a trauma surgeon.
I think you summed it up exactly right. Of the six patients that are still in the ICU, and we were making rounds on them earlier this morning, many of them are recovering. They remain critically ill. There are one or two of those six that I would consider to be profoundly ill. I think the big question is what their long-term outcome will be once we get them out of the hospital. I think they may well survive. In fact, I suspect that they will survive, but my concern is that they will have a lasting impact from this with regard to their functionality.
Is there a paralysis issue?
It is not a paralysis issue, no.
Angel, Nicole Insulata, WSVN 7 News in Miami. Have you ever seen this man there before? And how do you feel about reports that he's been there among folks there at Pulse and danced and drank with you guys?
I have not seen him before, but... It scares me, knowing that someone like this was constantly in that club. Like, how do I know he hasn't been into all the other LGBT places that we've been in? It scares me a lot, and I just think now security just has to be there at all times, definitely.
When you leave here, will you feel safe, and can you also identify some of the folks who are here with you?
Okay. As of now, I really don't want to step foot back into those places for a little bit, you know, just for my sane, because it'll bring back memories that I have. And then these are my brothers and sisters behind me.
Okay, down at the end of the table.
Angel and the doctors who had to treat these terrible wounds, Krishna Guruvarthy from Channel 4 News in the UK. What is your message to the political leaders who are now engaged in an argument over whether restricting guns would help prevent these sorts of things happening?
I really do think in order to have a gun, you have to have a reason. I don't think you should just have a gun just to have a gun. I mean, I believe in protecting yourself and all that, but if it's that easy to just bring two guns, huge guns like that, into this place that easy, there's something wrong.
This is Angel Cologne, a survivor of the nightclub shooting in Orlando, answering questions from reporters.
No, I was when he first shot me, I was facing the other direction, and I just fell face forward, so I never saw him.
What city are you from?
I'm originally from Boston, from Puerto Rico, though. But I live here now, yeah.
Where in?
I live in Polk County, actually, right now, yeah.
Right here in the dark blue shirt? You have a question?
Oh, yes. Yeah, I'm sorry. Angel, in Spanish, por favor. Este incidente va a cambiar.
This is a reporter asking Angel Colon a question in Spanish. He's a survivor of the Pulse shooting. He's been describing that night in really emotional detail, also giving his heartfelt thanks to the staff at Orlando Regional Medical Center, where this news conference is being held, saying, I love you guys, and also in general, in the wake of the worst mass shooting in U.S. history, he said, Angel Colon, a survivor, said, I've seen so much love from everyone.
No.
It's scary. Could you please talk a little bit about the
reporters are continuing to ask questions of Angel Colon and this team of doctors at Orlando Regional Medical Center. A very packed room. It's hectic at times. Lots of people asking questions directed to different people. They don't have enough microphones to go around. They've been passing microphones to each other so different doctors can talk about what one called singularly the worst day of my career and the best day of my career as that trauma center was overwhelmed.
You know, I think that it's almost impossible to point to one specific event or one specific patient interaction, right? I mean, the whole situation is difficult. As Chad alluded to, when something like this happens, you've trained for it, you've practiced it, and you just kind of get in a mode of doing what needs to be done. You know, when 44 people show up shot and are sick and bleeding to death, they're all close calls. I mean, it's, you know, patients were taken emergently to the operating room. That's a close call. If they hadn't been 3 blocks from the hospital, they might not have made it to a hospital. You know, I think that when you look at how the whole system functioned, it made it possible for these people to have the outcomes that they have. Speaking to other disaster-like situations, prior to this, I was at the University of Oklahoma, and we dealt with, obviously, severe weather issues, had the Oklahoma City Thunder playoff shooting that was there that I was a part of. But nothing really compares to this.
And you weren't there for the bombing?
No.
What is that for a lot of the city rooms where they can maybe
about the
type of... So that is a question that has come up. I think what we've identified, as I mentioned yesterday, is that there were a number of victims that sustained gunshot wounds to the head. Those victims were unable to get out of the club, and so unfortunately they appear to have passed away in the club. We did get one patient here that did sustain a gunshot wound to the head, and he is currently in the intensive care unit. As Dr. Havron alluded to, you know, we have encountered environmental disasters in the past, the hurricanes that, for those of you in this area, lived through about 10 years ago. Those were instrumental in helping us to refine our disaster plan. I'm sorry?
Red tank top back.
Back in 2004. Now, to answer your other question, that has also come up. None of us have had military experience, but what I can tell you is that the military surgeon community and the civilian surgeon community, from a trauma standpoint, are very close. We learn from each other. Many of the techniques that we used on these patients have been things that have come out of battlefield medicine, just as our military surgeons learn from what we encounter in the civilian side. We have seen many nights here where we see half a dozen gunshot wounds. We've had 12 gunshot wounds come in one night in the past. That is something that has helped us to train for this. This was just an escalation of those events.
Red tank top.
Salah Dizayu with Voice of America. My question is, yesterday the hospital released a statement of the updates on the patient and says 44 victims were treated and 9 died. You have mentioned that 44 were admitted. So can you clarify more on this statement? Because if you say that we know that the people that were wounded were 53, so if we add the 9 to the 44 that was admitted, that will make 53. So are we talking about this number or different numbers? And is the hospital by any chance expecting a visit from President Obama as he comes to Orlando on Thursday?
Okay, so as you all are aware, it's a very fluid situation. Numbers are constantly changing. What I will tell you, the most accurate numbers that we can come up with were 44 victims were brought to Orlando Regional Medical Center. 9 of those victims died in the first few minutes that they were here. That left us with 35 victims that we have been caring for that have been in the hospital. And as I mentioned, as of this morning, 27 of those patients still remain in the hospital. We understand that there were 11 patients that were treated at other facilities in town that were not brought here. They were obviously of lesser severity, and I believe the majority of those were discharged home. We were not involved in their care. I think the final numbers will need to come from the FBI as they complete their investigation. To answer your final question, our understanding is that President Obama is considering coming to Orlando. You all would probably know better than we would. We do not know what his plans are.
We have Dr. Luby has a statement he wants to make.
Just to add to a question earlier, we have a tremendous amount of support here. You know, you talked about cardiothoracic surgeons. I had a patient with major abdominal injuries and at the same time had major exsanguinating vascular injuries to the right leg and to the left arm. And Dr. Patel was here and helping me. It obviously would be very difficult to deal with 3 major injuries at once, and we were literally operating on different body parts at the same time, and that was very helpful.
Lady in a white shirt.
Thank you. Zoe Daniel from Australian Broadcasting Corporation. Just to follow up on the question around gun control, it's obviously renewed debate.
Reporters, continue asking questions of the medical team at Orlando Regional Medical Center, a packed house today of doctors, surgeons working in the trauma center the morning of the Pulse nightclub shooting in Orlando.
I think it's important to realize that the other night we took care of 45 patients with gunshot wounds, but it's not unusual for us to take care of 4 or 5 a night on a regular night. And you do the math, that adds up to 45 pretty quick. So it's a very serious problem that we have, and I don't know what the answer is.
Down here in the baseball cap.
Jason Deere, the Associated Press. For the people who were intaking patients in that first wave, there have been mention of these flatbed trucks that were bringing people in. Can someone talk about who were driving those trucks? Were they first responders? Were they private citizens? Who were the people that were bringing in folks in the ER in that first wave?
So I'm Dr. Hunter. I'm the associate medical director for Orange County EMS. Dr. Ross is the medical director. It was very fluid initially on scene. We had EMS response very quickly. It was right next to one of our fire stations. Orlando Police Department and some other citizens there were able to help extricate people who had gotten themselves out or dragged out a lot of people's friends, also helped them get out. At the time, the number of ambulances we had was not nearly as many as patients, so multiple patients were put in ambulances, multiple patients were put into any other vehicle that we could get them here. What they needed was to be at this trauma center as fast as possible. So we were doing our best to coordinate via the scene, myself and Dr. Parrish, to try to let them know people were coming. But obviously, it was not the way we typically would have done it.
So there was a mixture of private citizens helping.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And the Orlando Police Department, yes.
Lady in the blue shirt right there.
Doctors at Orlando Regional Medical Center talking about the night. Patients were coming in by the ambulance load, by the truckload, as their trauma center was overwhelmed in the hours after the shooting at the Pulse nightclub. 44 patients admitted there. I'm Scott Goldberg. You're listening to live coverage from ABC News.
From the
joined in the studio here by my colleague Mark Remillard. Mark, it's been a very powerful press conference.
Yeah, absolutely. Doctors describing just the intense amount of work that they had to do to go through and help save lives. Surgeons there describing that they were working and operating on one patient, two different body parts at the same time to help save some of these lives. And just an immense amount of work. And then a testament to that is the fact that, as they mentioned today, as they've updated the patient counts, no patient has succumbed to their wounds since the original nine that came in on Sunday. So very very intense amount of work for these doctors to go through.
And we
continue to listen now to doctors update their efforts that they've had to do since this began on Sunday morning.
Yes. Probably about 3:30 or 3:45, and then again at about 4:45 or 5.
We've had a question regarding Angel's age. Do you want to give your age?
Yeah, okay. I just turned 26.
Okay.
A-N-G-E-L, C-O-L-O-N.
Lady right here in the red.
Hi, Heather Lee, Channel 4 in Jacksonville. Angel, who did you go with to the club, and did they make it out okay?
I went with about three of my friends, and they all survived.
Okay. Down here at the end, the first lady in white and then second lady in white.
A very quick question to the surgeons. I'm just doing the maths here. Over the course of your professional lifetimes, how many victims of gunshot wounds do you estimate that you had each treated?
Hundreds. You, probably all the fingers in this room wouldn't count it up. We see almost 5,000 trauma victims a year. We're the busiest level one trauma center in the state. And of those 5,000, Dr. Ibrahim, 30, what percent? About 20% are currently due to what we would call penetrating trauma. About 1,000. I've been here 20 years.
I've been here 6 years and residency of 11.
You each say more than 10,000.
We'd never thought about it. But that number sounds reasonable.
Lady in white with a cap. Cap.
We heard that there was one of the officers was wounded, took a gunshot to the head. Are there any of the officers here? We haven't had any updates on their injuries. Can you give us any information on that?
I saw the officer that was injured. To my knowledge, one officer sustained a gunshot wound to the helmet in his forehead. He was alert, awake, had a bruise. Had a normal, basically, exam, and his helmet, the picture is floating around there on the internet with a big dent in it, and he went home.
Dr. Villar has a statement we'd like to make.
What's that?
Thanks. Lenny Bullar, one of the trauma surgeons. One of the things that's worth mentioning here is that the police department and the fire department did a phenomenal job. We have learned from previous disasters that hospitals very quickly get overwhelmed by the number of patients injured, and they're not able to provide service or care to the ones that really need it. And I think we all also want to make sure we thank the police department, because I barely could get in the hospital myself, and the outer perimeter was set very effectively by our law enforcement. So they did a phenomenal job. And I want to make sure they're not forgotten.
Hold on, here in the right on the floor with the blue shirt.
Angel, my name is Angel. Brian O'Keefe from ABC. I think I speak for everyone in this room who profoundly see you filing this thing. What does it mean to have your family, and do you have anything to say to the gay and lesbian community?
It means the world to me, having them around me. They're the ones who brighten up my day, who put a smile on my face, and I think that's one of the most important things in life, is to have those people that brighten up your day, that make everything positive. Because going through something like this, that's honestly is the best thing to have around you.
Kenny?
Doctors at Orlando Regional Medical Center updating the efforts to save lives following the massacre in Orlando over the weekend. That was Angel Colon, who's a survivor of the attack.